again in theguardian.com. About 30 meters above the ground, 120 feet, and engaged in a four-hour standoff with police before two New York Police Department officers climbed up the base and apprehended her. And the coverage of that, including on CNN, tried to emphasize that it was her fault that the whole harbor had been shut down and that there were 30 police and that it was expensive. And this is a perfect example of a mendacious showboating stunt in which you are encouraged to be afraid of dissent by the excessive reaction to it. And this is done by riot police as well. Well, Parafoggering is ready to come in. We've come to the bottom of the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And I'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Parafoggering and all the ships at sea. You've been listening to Press Watch, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. To hear previous shows, go to kboo.fm/presswatch.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. KBOO will be broadcasting the festival from noon to about 10 p.m. every day, and will be broadcasting throughout the state on Oregon Community Media radio stations from Ashland and Astoria to Warm Springs. Again, that's the 31st annual broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th, noon to 10 p.m. or so, every night at Waterfront Park in Portland and on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, this is Parafoggering, and the show is Fight the Empire on your radio station, KBOO. And topic today is the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia, and an interesting theory that has been developed about that. We'll get into that. Now, on last March 4th, Sergei Skripal and Yulia were poisoned in Salisbury, England. Sergei, he was a Soviet double agent, and he'd been exchanged in a prisoner swap, and that's how he got to England. He'd been tried for treason in the Soviet Union, and he got sentenced to, I believe, 13 years, which seems kind of a pretty light term for heavy charge like treason. But anyway, Sergei and Yulia were poisoned in Salisbury, and right away, British Prime Minister Theresa May accused Russia of using a deadly nerve agent called Novichok. And in the next week or two, over 100 Russian diplomats were expelled by the UK and the United States and other allies, though most of them were expelled by the United States and the UK. And this was a huge story for a while. It was in the papers, in the media every day, and then silence. Well, the reason for the silence is that D notices were sent out to the media in early May. That's D as in dumbstruck. And what is the D notice? Well, it's a kind of an advisory advising media editors and people to leave certain stories alone. And originally a defense, it's a defense and security media advisory, and it's an official request not to publish information. And this goes back to 1912, and over the years have been these D notices have been sent out, and the most recent was in 2017, and it referred to mentioning the name of one Pablo Miller. Well, this had its immediate effect. It had its desired effect, because after the D notices were sent out, there was no news for at least 2 months and counting. We will get to Pablo Miller later. But before the silence descended, the official story began to fall apart. One is, why did it take so long for this nerve agent to act? Novichok is not one single agent. It's a whole class of agents. It's Russian for newcomers or something. And why did it take, the one that was used presumably against the Skripals was something called A-234. Or U-234, and that it was much stronger than the usual military-grade nerve agent. So the question immediately arose, why did it take so long for this deadly nerve agent to act? Another sort of discrepancy that came out was that Novichok's grades, they were developed in the Soviet Union back in the 50s or 60s, but other countries also had it, and that is something that could be developed by any fairly well-equipped lab. And then there's also the question of motive, that if the Russians, why would the Russians want to do this, considering that this traitor only got 13 years in prison, and then he was swapped for other prisoners. And usually, swapped prisoners do not get killed, because if they do, then there's a that sort of makes it impossible to continue this way of swapping prisoners, which all countries sort of value it. Any country that runs spies and espionage operations, they want to have the possibility that they can swap spies for spies. And this was said by former British intelligence agent Annie Machon, who actually had been a guest on this show for one time a few years back. So the story was falling apart, but the thing is that by this time it was too late to change it, because Theresa May had kind of stuck with her story, and they'd already expelled England and the United States and others had already expelled over 100 Russian diplomats. It's hard to take that back. So the story, there was a story, and after the D notices came down, there was nothing said about it. There's also a question of what happened to the Skripals. They didn't, they never made an appearance. They apparently they're under British so-called protective custody. Yulia made a video appearance, and she makes some statement that she kind of wishes to be left alone, and that's it. Their family has tried to talk to these people, and without success. The Russian embassy has wanted to be assured that they were not under any kind of duress. That didn't happen. Well, anyway, now comes a British blogger who has his explanation for how and why Skripals got poisoned. His name is Rob Slane, and he's a British blogger. He has a blog called Blogmire. And I guess normally he writes about religious stuff, but he got into this examining the Skripal case. And he outlines his case as follows. The official theory, he says, is demonstrably untrue. It was announced before the investigation was barely begun. And he makes a point that other nations also make this nerve agent, and any lab could make it. Apparently, one of the creators of it come from Russia to the United States, and he wrote a book or an article, and he gave the formula for it. And it's not made out of any hard-to-find chemical. There are chemicals that are freely available, and here he published the formula, so anybody could go to it. Also, Slane makes the point that A-234 would have killed the Skripals instantly or destroyed their health in sort of irreparable ways. So going on from there, he talks about sort of four invisible clues. The first one is concerning Pablo Miller, who, as I mentioned before, seems to be the one who sort of brought about that D notice back in May. And Pablo Miller was the guy who, he was a British intelligence agent who was the one who recruited Skripal in the first place. Miller was sort of attached to the British embassy in Estonia, and he recruited Sergei Skripal. And lo and behold, when Skripal was exchanged and came to England, he came to live in Salisbury, which is the same town where Pablo Miller lives. The other invisible clue was a couple who were seen on a thoroughfare called the Market Walk. And they were spotted on one of these CCTV cameras. And they're walking there, they're strolling along Market Walk, and she is carrying a red bag. And they were seen at 1547, that's 3:47 in the afternoon. Another clue is the bag itself. Later, a red bag, when Yulia and Sergei Skripal had their seizure on a park bench, and witnesses said that at Yulia's feet was a red bag, and that police put it in an evidence bag and took it away. And the final invisible clue that Rob Slane talks about is where was Detective Sergeant Bailey? He was the one who came to the rescue of the Skripals, and he was poisoned too. And he seems to have sort of dropped out of sight. Slane goes on to the agitated Mr. Skripal. Sergei and Yulia, they sort of spent part of the day going around Salisbury. They had drinks, and then they went to a restaurant called Zizi, and there they had Skripal was a regular customer there, and but on the day in question, the lunch was 20 minutes late, and Sergei was really angry. He really threw a fit, and he wanted his food right away, and he also wanted his bill right away, because he seemed to be in a hurry to leave, as though he had to meet somebody. Well, then we come to the... So we'll kind of hold that question. Who was Sergei Skripal intending to meet? Next we turn to the Trump dossier. And according to one witness who Rob Slane mentions, who sort of knows about these intelligence affairs, the Trump dossier was written by a Russian, sort of in the KGB style of writing a report. Now the report, the dossier was sort of put together by a former British intelligence guy named Christopher Steele, who was a friend of Pablo Miller, and he also knew Sergei Skripal. Skripal also had links, even though he was sort of living in England, he was seen traveling around Europe a bit, sort of doing little odd jobs in the intelligence field, and he had links with the Czech Republic intelligence. Now, the Trump dossier was a group called Fusion GPS, which is sort of acting as a on behalf of the Democratic National Committee. They paid Christopher Steele for his dossier on Trump, and according to Slane, that the real writing was done by Sergei Skripal because he was a Russian and sort of knew the KGB way of writing reports. He also says that the dossier was not meant to be put in public in the domain. It was sort of done for money. Steele did it for money. You know, he's paid by the Fusion GPS, and that it was something he threw together, and presumably that would be the end of it. It was never meant to see the light of day because everybody expected Hillary Clinton to win the presidential election, and there would be no reason for this dossier to be made public. But Donald Trump won, and now it is public. And so, according to Slane, is pretty a good chance that, according to his theory that he is outlining, he's saying that this is all conjecture. You know, take it for what it's worth. That Skripal tried to blackmail Steele and Fusion GPS. So, Slane goes on from there that the reason that Sergei Skripal was so eager to get his lunch done and get out of the restaurant was he had an appointment to meet somebody to get his payoff. And that somebody was very likely the couple who were seen walking along the market walk shortly before at 1547, which is around the same time that Sergei Skripal was leaving the restaurant. So that Slane's educated guess is that Skripal was to get his payoff at the park bench, and that the red bag contained some sort of incapacitating substance, not necessarily a nerve agent which would kill instantly, but some kind of a an agent or some sort of poison that would not be fatal, but it would be a warning. And then he goes on in his these blog articles. There's sort of five of them or six of them, and he ties up a few loose ends, and he refutes the door handle theory. That was one theory that the was being put out, was that the Russians somehow put smeared this nerve agent on the door handle of Sergei Skripal's house, and that he and Yulia both handled the door handle, and that's what eventually poisoned them 5 hours later, which seems kind of very strange. And the fact that they were both affected at the same time, even though they're different body builds and all that. Another question is, why didn't Sergei speak out? He didn't say anything about being poisoned. He made no statements at all. Well, according to Slane, he knew who poisoned him. And so, and then finally, this the UK government, they didn't know that this was a that this was happening, that this was an operation put together by UK and maybe US intelligence, and that when it came out that the UK government, they panicked, which is the reason why there would be, they sort of fastened on, they didn't actually know what had happened, and they kind of fastened on this theory about the Novichok poisoning done by the Russians. And of course, once they panicked and started expelling diplomats, it's very hard to take that back. So in effect, that is Rob Slane's theory, which he outlines in great detail in his Blogmire blog. And you know, you can look it up and check it out. If people want to call in with any questions, the number is 503-231-8187. And after the denotices and the silence descended, Sergei and Yulia were both put under UK protection. And they have never been seen since, except for one video that was done of Yulia, and who knows, they maybe never will. So one report is that they were given new identities in another country. Kind of reminds me of a TV series from the late 60s called The Prisoner, about people being imprisoned on a luxury resort. And, you know, they live pretty nice, prosperous lives, but they couldn't leave the resort. And the case of this TV series went through, oh, I think about 17 episodes of the one character trying to escape. It's also being said that that Russia is preparing a legal case because they have tried, you know, according to international law, Yulia is a Russian citizen. Sergei is actually a dual citizen. There was even a report that he had written the Russian government trying to get back to Russia, but that's just a report. I don't know. And so that according to international law, the Russians would be entitled to at least visit with their citizens and find out that they're not being held under duress. That never happened. So the Skripals are in protective custody. They have not been seen except for Yulia's video that was made. And so all we have is the UK government's word that they are indeed in protective custody or whatever, or that they are voluntarily there. We don't know. You might think of it this way, that if you were either Skripals, you had this attack, you went unconscious, and then sometime later, a couple weeks later, you wake up in the hospital. You don't know what happened to you, but you're being told by hospital staff and British government officials that the Russians have poisoned you. Well, how will you know different? Okay, we have Joe on the line. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Pear. Interesting thing you're covering today, and I'm curious. Just in the last couple of days, there's been this new case.
That's right, yes.
And all I hear is this couple in the 40s, and I haven't looked at it online to find out any more details, but it's been very elusive, I guess.
Well, they have been named. They have been named, and apparently the story is, you know, they live in a town nearby, not in Salisbury, and that they were... The official story seems to be that somehow they picked up this nerve agent somewhere, you know, and that hasn't been revealed or spoken about. I did read on RT, and take it for what it's worth, RT claims that the gentleman in this of the couple is a registered narcotics addict, you know, getting treatment or something, but I haven't seen that anywhere else. But anyway, you know, we were hoping that more will come out, because if if this poison was left all around, I mean, where besides, we've heard stories that it was left in on the doorknob, on Sergei's car, a bunch of other places, and where did this the second couple, where did they pick up the nerve agent? It's getting very, very curious. I don't know.
Yeah, it almost seems like there's a covering the track sort of a thing, because now and I had no idea what the story that you're telling us today, I had no idea that was emerging onto the backwaters of the web through this blogger. But now it seems to just be confusing that and saying, oh, well, this is almost more of a terrorist kind of an approach to saying, okay, people, you need to be afraid because this is happening again.
Well,
and it almost seems too convenient at this time. So I'm trying not to let my paranoia get away with me.
Well, try and keep up with the facts as they emerge, you know, and keep a practiced eye, a rational eye on all this stuff and see what makes sense. You know, some people might say, well, the reason why the Russians would poison Sergei Skripal is to teach him a lesson, because they realized that even though he'd been exchanged, he was still doing intelligence work, and that this would presumably violate some Russian code of conduct, and that they got him for that. Well, okay, think about that for a while. It doesn't fit together for me. It doesn't hold together, because that just sort of calls attention to the whole thing. And so I don't know. There's all these theories and new facts are emerging. And this, as far as the latest poisoning goes, let's find out more about who this couple is. Apparently they had no connection to the Skripals, and we don't know where they were presumably picked up the nerve agent. And mm-hmm. we might also keep in mind that many people have said that what poisoned the Skripals was not a nerve agent, because it would have killed them right away on the spot, but that it was some kind of a narcotic or whatever, some sort of poisoning that would not have the lethal effect of A-234, which we should remind ourselves is considered a military grade, whatever that means, nerve agent, much stronger than any other in the sort of repertoire. And so that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, and the NPR is what I've heard, and the sketchy details that they have say, well, they initially thought it might be some contaminated drug that this couple was using, and then they switched it over, saying no, it was the same thing. And
that was true in the original case also, that when they were first seen on the park bench, people suspected some sort of poisoning. Not a nerve agent. But anyway, it's time to go, and thank you for your call, and thank you all for your attention. Stay tuned, because coming up next is Air Cascadia, and then Flashpoints, and then Between the Covers, with author Poe Ballantyne talks about his new book, Whirl Away. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk talks to Northwest writer Renee Sims about a new collection of stories, Meet Behind Mars. And these KBOO programs are made possible by you, the members. And if you'd like to be, if you're not a member already, you can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate, because this is your radio station, folks. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You're listening to KBO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. Up next, we have Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers. 11:30, it's Black Book Talk. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Thank you.